Cynthia Venus Abrams, and she is from Bloomington and has her own firm now. She's working at Mankato.
What's the weather like outside?
It is so close to raining. It was dripping and dropping as I was driving home. So I left the umbrella, but I brought the...
I saw you had... Thank you.
Cynthia, if you'd like to have a seat here, please.
Get disconnected from the world down here.
But if it turns into a tornado, then you're in the right place.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I'd just like to explain the process to you. You will give an opening statement for 3 to 5 minutes, and then we are asking 7 questions that we have asked of all the candidates. Then there'll be some questions from the council members. We'll ask you if you have any questions about the duties and responsibilities of being a trustee, and then you will have 2 to 3 minutes to make a closing statement and add anything you'd like.
Good.
Okay, so we're ready when you are.
All right. Thank you very much for this opportunity to present my credentials for your consideration for this, for your recommendation for appointment. I realize that this is a many-layered process, and am humbled that you all are spending this amount of time to scrutinize and review and really identify both the credentials of the individuals who are presenting, as well as trying to match that with where the system is going in the future and the needs of the state as the system is able to deliver it. And so each of you brings a perspective that is invaluable, and that's the beauty, I think, of the public sector, of state government, and how that plays such an important role in public education. Because public education, whether it's at the K-12 level or higher ed, is all about people, and it's all about people being their very best. My interest in even seeking this appointment is because my knowledge and my love of the state, first and foremost, and our future. I would definitely like us to have a better future than we're having right now and give that future to our younger generations is really what my life has been about in its own sort of twist and turny way, professionally and personally. I have always found my civic duty to be an important part of my existence, going all the way back to my days as a student at Minnesota State Mankato, then Mankato State University. So I really find that part of my calling in life is to determine how I can best help wherever it is that I am. And currently that would be seeking this opportunity as a trustee. My love of public education goes all the way back to the time when I, as a member of our family, I was the first generation. My sister and I were the first to attend college. My sister graduated with her AA from Normandale. Normandale was 4 blocks from our house. It was the only place to go, really, if you were graduating in Bloomington and didn't have an understanding of where else to go. She then went down to complete her degree at Mankato, and I followed along because I was 17 years old, and my parents were not going to let me out of their sight or a family member's sight to go off to college. And it was the right place to be. I was embraced, and I was mentored, and I really found some great opportunities to lead and to grow, which I never even necessarily expected to happen. From that role as a student, I then became a public employee a couple of different times, working for U.S. Senator Dave Durnberger, working for the state legislature. I've been in this room more than a few times, working as a public employee in the Carlson administration for, at that time, the Department of Jobs. They changed their name. Jobs and Training, Economic Security. So workforce needs are very much a part of my understanding, my deep understanding, both from a government perspective as well as a professional perspective, because later on in my career, I was head of marketing and public relations for Fairview Southdale Hospital and the series of clinics that roll around it, so the Southwest Metro Care System. Workforce needs 10 and 12 years ago very much were at the heart of the healthcare debate then in terms of how we were going to get through some generations of skilled workers and the skilled workforce, and that remains a very high priority in the state today. So I have a very strong understanding of that. I then went back to my alma mater to be alumni director and head special events, and I feel that I brought a very strong public relations presence and strategy to that. It was at a time in my life where personally I had aging parents. We had three of them. I had teenage kids. I was in the middle of a one-hour-plus commute in each direction and did my best for 3.5 years and realized that I couldn't be everything to everybody. But I left on very favorable terms and continue to join them when I can at events, both up here, mostly up here in the Twin Cities, to be part of the alumni community that we have up here. Most currently, I would say that my interest in the continued understanding and challenges that we have now with a new chancellor and a governor who is so committed to the future of this state, and that in and of itself is refreshing. For the first time in more than a dozen years, we have a governor who cares more about the state than his own than his own agenda. And that's palpable. That you can feel that if you read the paper, if you are understanding where some of our logjam is, that is important because that's leadership. And so the Minsky challenges, which seemed almost unfathomable or so difficult to achieve now with a new chancellor who has a profound vision and presumably building a new team of individuals, this is the time to be a trustee, to see where we can take a system that has such an important economic basis for this state, has such an important role in preparing our future, and make the very best of it that we can be. And that's where you take an asset that some would say is a challenge, and you say, oh, no, that's an asset, that's an opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll start the questioning. Tim?
Yep. Good morning.
Hi.
Could you please describe your understanding of the role of a trustee and explain why you consider yourself a good candidate for this role?
The role of a trustee is... I can almost say I've been in something very similar to it. So I've been an elected official, having been elected to the Bloomington Board of Education. I have been a staff member, serving all sorts of different boards in both the capacity as technically the executive director of the Alumni Association. So I can understand the staff and the board member role. But a staff board member role still has a variation across the general nonprofits. Then you have public sector nonprofits that are that are beholden to data privacy, data practices, open meeting laws, transparency, conflicts of interest. My closest role in that right now is my board service on Clearway, Minnesota, which is I'm an appointed at-large member, but we also have executive appointments from the governor and legislators. So the role of a trustee really is to represent and to identify the needs of the collective system, certainly recognizing that we have many entities within that system, but that for the purposes of the planning and the execution of the overall operation, it is a single system. And that those who come together, as you all do at this table, are a team, first and foremost, a team of strong individuals sometimes, and a team of strong wills, and very, very intelligent people. And I feel that from my experience, both as an elected official, as a staff member, and all of it, I bring that perspective, the respect for staff, the appropriate balance of questions and praise and support, but also that we're in this together. And yet the trustees are technically the employers. They hold the most responsibility. They need to be able to report to the governor that this is an organization that is well-run, that will never embarrass, that will only continue to instill confidence. So it really is the trustees that are the bottom line, or the buck stops, sort of, with them, 15 times.
Thank you.
I think you've answered the next question here. Describe your past board experience and its relevance to the Board of Trustees. Unless you have something to add to that, maybe we can just go on to the next question.
I will add just one more thing, and that is that there are times in a board debate, in a decision that needs to be made, where there is a minority opinion, where you don't reach consensus. And in Minnesota, we want more than anything to have consensus. And sometimes it's very appropriate that a lot of work gets done behind the scenes to try to move someone toward consensus. Having strong split votes usually is a sign that there's not a lot of the support for the administration, perhaps, is not as strong as it can or should be. And that needs to get worked through. You wouldn't want to have that out there for too long a period of time. On the other hand, if there are minority opinions that are strong, that are based on logic and fact and some sense, people should be allowed to vote no for good reason. They should be allowed to kind of state their point. I've been in that position more than once, and find that that is the best way to continue nurturing respect on the board, so that nobody feels that there's a clique or that there's some sense that a voice is not as valued as another voice. And so that is a value that I find in board membership, and it is, I think, only as a result of a lot of experience working with people and working on those relationships to keep them solid. So thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you.
The next question is, what do you see as the key issues on the horizon for higher education in Minnesota and for the Minnesota State Colleges and University System in particular?
Okay, thank you. When the Chancellor and this Board of Trustees created the framework back in January that involved certainly access to extraordinary, to the highest quality education that can be delivered by the public system, that was certainly in a tradition of MinsQ. There's no question that that's what we've always wanted. The second framework element, though, is the notion that we really need to be identifying the workforce. We need to be the profound provider of the future workforce. And that is a little bit of a much more strategic, ambitious goal than has perhaps ever been stated that way, because we are at this confluence of such change economically. The economic challenges are significant, and the smartest kids who are coming out of our K-12 systems are being snagged by other colleges. You know, there is now enough private money out there that they may go off in that direction. We would hope that at some point in time they maybe would come back to the state universities, perhaps for a master's degree or a PhD, and that's always the welcome mat that is out there. It's the affordable welcome mat. And that third item, keeping it all affordable and accessible, quite honestly, if Mankato had not been affordable, I'm not sure I would have ever made it to college. And that's the trepidation that every first-generation college family faces, is that sinking feeling. Not that you just go out and go into debt for an education, but rather that it is something that we will do our darndest to pay as we go. And that is a principle, and it's a value and a tradition that I believe this governor is committed to in whatever way is necessary. And we as trustees need to continue mulling what that really means, and how that focus of, as the chancellor calls it, our core mission. You know, our core business, making sure that we do not suffer the mission creep that costs, but rather that the quality education that's delivered affordably is done so. But that what I believe is the intangible, it comes from the workforce and the community relationships that at this point in time take a lot of work, take a lot of trust, but I believe really will propel us to that next level, opening up doors and creating opportunities.
Thank you. Next question is, could you please describe your understanding of diversity and your experience working with diverse populations?
A great question, and very relevant, particularly as it applies to our student bodies, because our student bodies, first and foremost, we think of diversity as being an ethnic diversity. We also have, having spent 3.5 years very recently on a four-year campus, we have an age diversity too. We have a lot of non-traditional students coming back with their own set of challenges and their own gifts to the classroom. And I think systematically the system as a whole, the system has certainly advanced itself toward recognizing the needs of non-traditional students and what they bring and their role in the marketplace, that they don't necessarily need the same level of services that a traditional 18 to 20, 24-year-old might need. So from that perspective, they bring a different perspective. We also have then a growing non-American-born population that is really recognizing the value, as they should, that our public higher education system brings. When I was pursuing my midlife master's career, my master's degree at St. Catherine, just a couple years ago, I had the opportunity to do an independent study within MinsQ's Office of Diversity. I needed one credit, and this was kind of a really cool way to just get out of my comfort zone in particular. And so I worked with the Office of Diversity and helped evaluate the effectiveness of a project that was going on where Minsky was sending its presidents and like senior and deans and very high level campus representatives out to churches, particularly in right within the urban core of Minneapolis and St. Paul, but highly diverse Spanish-speaking churches, historic Black churches, churches where it was more diverse than not. And on a particularly given day, 1 week before the Super Bowl, so this is January 23rd of 2009, the president got to speak at a pulpit for whatever, 4 to 6 minutes, about the value of higher education. And so I sat in on a couple of those different church sessions and was really amazed by, first of all, the greeting and the respect that was given to the president, and presidents love that, and moreover, the graciousness of these individuals as they entered a room that probably was a little uncomfortable for them as well, and the outreach. And then, beyond that outreach, though, the layers of communication and trust and relationships that it took to even get that invitation and that opportunity for that president to speak. These are not easy relationships for middle-aged white Minnesotans to build. You know, either it comes naturally or it doesn't. And the more we can create and really support those opportunities and those relationships and take the time to understand the cultural differences that take place, the greater trust the system has, and the more likely it is that one way or another families will choose our schools and send their very bright kids, their hardworking kids, and the kids who have the greatest drive to success, the drive to be entrepreneurs, to our schools.
Representative.
What is your vision? What is your vision for maximizing the access to education opportunities for students? Your vision.
Mm-hmm. My vision is not very clear at this point because I am not an educator, and because I certainly know that this has been worked on for years now by the administration, by the overall Minsky administration, and in an incremental way has been executed throughout the campus system and structure. So the affordability question still comes into line with the access to technology and the identification of appropriate curriculum which should be can be delivered as efficiently as possible. And with particularly with our youngest students, the traditional students, what role does technology play in their being able to capture the essential general education requirements, capture reading at a much more efficient pace than sitting in a classroom? Recognizing that the classroom experience and lab experiences and all those carry a very high value and are an important part of education. So my vision, I guess, is to identify that there are definitely tools, and some of them can be very expensive, particularly as you roll them out across campuses, two-year campuses and four-year campuses. We can't think that we are going to be able to instill good new graduates into a workforce if we haven't been able to give them the proper tools to learn the trade. And I mean that more specifically in the two-year even than the four-year. We are so prone to just thinking about those 4 years, and yet the 2 years, very, very importantly, the biggest job growth that is coming up in the next five to 10 years are going to foremost require a high school degree and then secondly an AA degree. And we need to recognize that, and we need to be ready to make hard decisions that might come at the expense of the 4 year in order to make the 2 year work right. And that's a mind shift. That's a mind shift because my generation in particular was raised with the idea that everybody can and should go to college. And as a result, you know, and I look at that and I look at my brother who chose one quarter at Normandale, and that was it for him, older than I, and his sons who have not spent a day in the classroom since graduating from high school. And I look at I continue to check in on them and hope that at some point in time they choose to make that advancement even at an AA level. I think that would be a great thing. So, but I see them as definitely going to a two-year program, and that's great. And that should be where they want to take their professions. Hope that helps.
And you've already started to talk a little bit about the next question, but I'll throw it out and you can add if you'd like to. Describe the unique challenges of a system that is comprised of technical, community colleges, and state universities.
If I came from a large family, the first sentence out of my mouth would be, you know, the great diversity of conversation that happens when you have a large group of people who have different needs. That challenge, I think, comes at the challenge, but the leadership needs to come from the chancellor and the trustees, that there is a plan in place and a vision in place of, first and foremost, what our core business is. And at some point in time, there needs to be some entities that get a little bit more attention, understandably, in order to fulfill the mission and the goals that are necessary. We are only existing because we serve the people of the state of Minnesota and the future of that state, and the young people in particular. So I think about the challenges being that we will be mindful of the needs that they have. We will do our best to prioritize, and that priorities are not set in stone, that there will be times of what is perceived as inequity, but that's just in order to bring each of those unique roles and missions up to a standard that we feel is fulfilling the extraordinary and the excellence, mm-hmm. that is fulfilling, positioning them for the highest possible a return on investment with those workforce and the community relationships that we want them to build. We can't say that we're expecting this of them and then not do the appropriate thing to support them. And the 4 years, they carry a cachet, they carry a stronger administration, they carry an overall larger mantle in their roles in their regions, actually, I should say. And they deserve a place at the table, but more than ever, we really need to recognize that we've got three unique individual elements, and our economy right now needs to ask more and needs to extract more from those 2 years.
Here's your last one. What do you see, or could you imagine, being a conflict of interest for you in a role as a trustee? And if you did perceive that, how would you handle it?
That's an excellent and an important question. And in the public sector in particular, the trust in trustee is knowing that the people who are sitting at the table really do understand their role in the system. I would identify an immediate conflict, obviously, as being any situation where even were my children to enroll in a state university or a two-year program, that I would be letting somebody know that now, in fact, I was a customer of the system as well as a trustee, and we would express that and identify if there was any element to that. My children right now are going to be out of state for the next 2 years at least. My son goes to Kalamazoo College in Michigan, and my daughter will be enrolling at Northwestern University in Evanston. So I am not an immediate customer of any of them.
Do you consider that a conflict of interest if your children attended a Minsky institution?
I would want it to be made aware.
Okay.
You know, some could perceive it as such.
Yeah.
And I recognize, even as I'm not wearing a purple and gold T-shirt. I don't have my Mankato State alumni shirt on right now, but I do. That is where I came from, and that is the campus that I know best. So that, but I don't consider that a conflict of interest. And I feel that my 4 years now away from the campus certainly has identified that I am really here for the system at large.
May I have
another conflict?
I don't think. Ms. Abrams is done.
I thought you had finished.
We're in my capacity as a leadership or public relations consultant, for me to even be in a subcontractor relationship with any entity where any of the campuses or the offices would be engaging in a consulting contract, I would also disclose that as well.
Yeah.
And really, I would even disclose it while there was even discussion. And it's not... My consulting practice is wide enough, but it is in the realm of the public sector that I am very mindful of it, and I am beholden to actually a higher standard in my service on Clearway Minnesota's board, and it's very, very stringent policy. So if nothing else, maybe I could get a little contract with the University of Minnesota if I'm no longer on the Clearway board. But right now, that is the it's a big it's an obligation, and it's part of the duty of signing up for this kind of an important role, but one that I would take seriously and report accordingly to whichever the process is that they would.
And would you recuse yourself from discussion and voting in that case?
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
That's what I was looking for.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the council members?
Well, I just had one more. Could you discuss briefly the differences between administration and management?
Management being the board?
Of an institution. The administration and the management of an institution. And you don't need to. This is just a suggestion here.
The individuals or the...
The roles of a board versus the roles of the management of an institution.
Yeah, that's the line we always go back to from even my school board days and the work that I did serving on the Bloomington Parks and Recreation Advisory Commission, still in my 20s, was that the board needs to make sure that the cost of the bleachers is in the budget and that it has been factored in and that there will be enough money to maintain it in the future, that we've thought that through. But it is not the board's role to determine what the color of the bleachers is. Mm-hmm. And that's always sort of been the go-to framework for me, that I, even as an executive director in my alumni board, that I was going to them for direction. I was seeking out their best possible advice for either strategic direction or assistance with execution or tackling problems that were coming along in the realm of operations. And they were very, very willing to give good advice upon enough communication. And sometimes they asked me very hard questions that forced me to go back and do more homework, or do more digging, supply more. As a board member on the Bloomington School Board, I asked before I was going to give any support to a bond referendum, $108 million bond referendum, I continued to ask staff what this meant in a long-term, really the maintenance, as we expanded the square footage of all of our different schools, what was this going to look like as heating costs rose, as air conditioning costs rose, we were expanding all this. This had tails to it. And I continued to ask for those questions respectfully. I continued to look for the information. That is a very different role that some, particularly elected officials, I think, feel sometimes in playing I'm going to outsmart staff role. And that is, I think, sort of premised in a certain amount of disrespect, that they will continue to ask and probe and seek out information that may or may not have relevance or really a core piece of information. First and foremost, it's a trust situation, that I trust that if I'm on a board capacity, that the people who are the administration, who are the paid staff, are professionals, and that they have been vetted, and they've been tested, and they are seasoned, and they're knowledgeable, and they have the best interest of the organization at heart. And respectfully speaking, then, if I am on the staff side, I would expect that the board members who are on the board have first and foremost the mission of the organization at heart and are supporters of the organization and want the best, have come to the strategic plan in support of that plan, and that we are all together as a team. So it's a healthy balance of questions and continued challenge and teamwork, and in particular at the board level and across then senior leadership, that we are leaders in some ways and yet ultimately a team, a very strong team that has to continue processing toward the plan.
Thank you.
Sonia?
Sure. Within the role of trustee, much attention is given to the University of Minnesota and the MSU system itself. But there are greater Minnesota out-of-state institutions that need equal attention outside of the Twin Cities. How would you assure the equitable attention to those out-state institutions?
How would I assure it? When I really think of the MSU system, And because Metro State was so much the last one to come to the family, I really do think of us being almost a service to the greater Minnesota. And I know that there's a handful in the Twin Cities. They are almost just part of the fabric of the Twin Cities. But our greater Minnesota schools are so much more a core of those communities. They play such a role. So my experience, and this goes all the way back to the late 80s when I was working for U.S. Senator Dave Durnberger, when we would go to Worthington, Southwest State was fairly new, I think, in the late 80s, when we went to Mankato, when we went to Winona or Moorhead, to the fours, that was certainly, it was a big deal. That was where the larger meeting rooms were before convention centers and things. And there's always been an academic, intellectual, cultural hub that these universities serve, in particular the fours. The twos, however, are serving just as much of an important role because chambers of commerce are more connected to our twos and to our twos even than our fours. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting because it's a recognition that in this time of great change in particularly our greater Minnesota communities, that we need to leverage all of those assets, and the assets are as much financial as they are intellectual assets. And it's beautiful and it's exciting because that's the, as hard as change can be, it is that very creative time right now where what the many pieces that were sort of fractured when we went into this change, particularly in 2008, are going to create something in another 2-3 years, and even are creating it today. That who would have dreamed? Who would have dreamed that would be the case? And that's where I see the leadership from MinSCU being just so much more practical than the University of Minnesota. And I'll just say that as a proud alum, that it's about shoe leather, and it's about being practical, and it's about having the right expectation that you can go out and make a difference in this world. And our students seek the education first and foremost. They don't seek a big marching band experience. And that is so much the culture of our campuses. So I would relish that opportunity by doing an awful lot of outreach. As I know that there are certainly board hearings that take place, there are board meetings that take place off into greater Minnesota, and opportunities to tour campuses and centers of excellence, I will be there for those because that is really where it's getting done.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Janet?
Thank you, Cynthia. A little bit of a follow-up to Sonia's question. As these three systems had merged, and having worked in one of the technical colleges, it was always a feel that the technical piece of that was shadowed to a certain extent. And I'd just like to hear some of your thoughts on how we can, you know, shift that back, and there's a cost element tied to that technical piece that is not tied to your other institutions, mm-hmm. i.e., you need the tools, you need the machinery, and the very physical stuff mm-hmm. you need to learn on. Some of it is very, very dated. trust me. So, could you expand on that and give me your thoughts on how we can level that playing field a little bit again?
This is almost like, you could also ask this question, I think, of anybody running for office this year, too, because the question is how much do we know about the role of manufacturing and production and service delivery that is going to be necessary and helpful to our economy in 2 to 10 years from now? And I know that there is an awful lot of work being done right now by the Association of Manufacturers, by the high-tech industry. Lots of different industry thinkers right now are doing an awful lot of collaborating, and the chancellor was on the cover of Enterprise Minnesota's magazine that landed in my mailbox earlier this week. And he is talking about manufacturing, and he is talking about also the notion that, and this is where I got the statistic about the fact that even the 2-year degree is going to be required in so many of these jobs. And that might be nursing assistant, or it might be something actually in manufacturing, or something related to any of our other businesses that somehow have evaporated in the last 10 or 15 years. And the pride that the the work that it takes to actually establish the business is one thing, but then keeping it filled with the best talent and the talent that wants to stay put. Those are all numbers. Those are all numbers. We have the data. I think we even have the mindset in place and the leaders finally in place to make the political decisions. I think we have the social structure in place throughout the economies of Greater Minnesota who are willing to say we are ready to change how we do business or how we will leverage all of our assets to keep these businesses here. And on the feeding the workforce perspective, then what we are saying is, whether it's presenting to the legislature of the needs that do need to be brought, the assets that do need to be reestablished at our campuses. If you want this and others are willing to provide this, then this is our share, and this share actually is long overdue. You can't do it on the cheap, and business wants these sorts of, by business and industry, they want our, they don't want to do the training at their work site. They want a fairly educated, trained individual to come to get to them. And that might not be a 21-year-old. That might be a 35 or a 50-year-old. And that's the other part that is very, that puts a very human face on some of these needs.
Thank you. I think we have time for just one more question, if anybody has a question.
Bob, did you want to do yours? Or?
Go ahead.
Okay, Ron.
Cynthia, as a trustee, you represent all Minnesotans, mm-hmm. and you specifically not have any particular interest, community, or constituency in mind as you do this. Given that in mind, the Board of Trustees has many subcommittees, and given that you could take a choice and choose which subcommittee you're on, mm-hmm. what would that subcommittee do, and what would be your objective on that committee?
I'm assuming that there's like a budget one and I'm not even sure what the names of the committees are. I know that there's one on advancement.
There's a variety of committees, and what I'm really looking for in base terms is what would your focus be that you bring to the Board of Trustees?
That's a great question, and focus in this particular case really is the focus of service. And I think about the board experience that I have and sort of the collective vision. My strengths are in strategic planning and in leadership or capacity development. And so it's the idea that from a discipline and a focus perspective that the 15 trustees continue to kind of work in harmony, and that we are all staying focused to this framework of three so that doesn't kind of fall off the webpage, and that we are doing what is appropriate and creative, asked by the chancellor to support and think beyond the box. And so my abstract thought processes and my strategic planning experiences, I think, probably put me in that category versus a finance, versus a curriculum or interest in sort of the other aspects of administration sometimes that fall upon board members. So currently I'm on the nominating, I chair the nominating committee at Clearway, Minnesota, which is all about the future board members and the fact that you can hold up to a six-year term. On a life-limited organization, a six-year term is, that will be the class that ultimately gets close to sunsetting the organization. So a lot of it is to really continue positioning the whole organization for the future. That first and foremost is out of strategic planning, I think, but it also secondly is out of HR and development, which is kind of the more the intangible assets of the organization.
Thank you.
We're mentioning to all of the candidates that this is the board packet for last month, that it requires a great deal of time and sacrifice, and we just want people who are applying to know how heavy the workload might be. Would you like to make a brief 2 to 3 minute closing statement?
Sure. I sort of feel like I have presented pretty much every aspect of my public and even some of my personal life. We have been a very public family in Bloomington. We have supported so many aspects of education, largely K-12, because that's where our kids have been. My interest in serving the state is really the one thing that I'm doing right now. I've turned down numerous board opportunities in the last couple of years as I have been building my business, because I really wanted to make sure that when I had an opportunity to make the difference at the level that I feel I am best suited to do so, that I am not then shirking commitments that I have made elsewhere. So as much as my roles in public health and professional associations could have created some really great things to do, I continue to be in search of that one place where my voice can make a difference. And as I look at the sum of my life, this really, in a sort of kismet sort of way, is it. And I leave you with two very visual images that float in my head and were as I was driving over here. Number one is just last fall, as the Normandale Community College young people were putting together the end of their big Do the Town Right, or whatever the big fundraising thing is, and they work with the Mall of America, and they're pulling $5 bills out of everybody's pockets, and they raise an incredible amount of money, even incredible compared to what I've experienced with the young people's activity at Mankato, okay? And I was just so proud of them, and so I went to this, you know, I paid my $15 or $25 and went to a silent auction, because it's a community thing to do. And I was just so amazed that of the amount of energy from these young people presenting what they did, and they had been in a competition of these teams, and one of them, you know, earned more or raised more. And yet they were so, these are the leaders of tomorrow. And they were from every diverse background you can name. They're, you know, of this group of 8 or 10. And my heart just warmed, because this was going on at Normandale. This is in my backyard, and this is exciting. And this is the story. And the fact that they have a great relationship with Mall of America makes me even happier, because it's just a Bloomington thing. But then the other part is the chilling, so proud experience when we would do a graduation in Mankato, commencement. The kids come up, the families find them, the cameras come out, and you can tell the first generation, you can tell the immigrant families, you can tell the families who have just worried and saved and scrimped and done everything they could to support that child. And as much as it seems like we say that in commencement and it's a good thing, those of us who have had the resources and the support and sort of take it for granted, you take one look at those families and the pride, and you realize that this particular case, this four-year institution has made a profound difference, not just in one life, but in 20 or 30 or 50. And that's the exciting part, and that would be what you... Oh, is that my time? And that would be what I drove home with very, very happy. And that's the job well done.
Thank you very much for coming and speaking with us today. Mm-hmm.